I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. There's no one that can match me.
Yo! And welcome back to The Fix, which is the realest and blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. Brought to you by yours truly, your host, Joseph Ward, a.k.a. Yep, I said that shit. Right? Giving it to you. Give you the ones and twos, the ins and outs, ups, downs, diagonals, whatever you want to know about sports from our perspective. It's an audio barbershop, man. I get it in. Don't hold back. Or like the country people say, I don't hold bite. I ain't holding bite nothing. I ain't holding nothing bite. As you know, The Fix is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips through their African history book series, blog series, YouTube channel, African history curriculum app, the actual On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, as well as the lectures, classes, educational sessions, keynote speaking sessions that On the Shoulders of Giants delivers to you. It can either be face-to-face or it can be digital. You know what I'm saying? You can either do it with us or by yourself. Either way. So for more information, make sure you visit www.ontheshoulders1.com to learn more about On the Shoulders of Giants. Buy yourself a book, buy yourself a t-shirt, watch a video, learn something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, remember, The Fix is a part of the Freedom Train Network, right? And the Freedom Train Network, for you to learn more about it, visit www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can follow me, Joseph Ward, and The Fix on Twitter at JoeWard84. You can follow the Freedom Train Network on Fix at Freedom Train Net. You can follow the Freedom Train Network on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Network Facebook page. Subscribe to the Freedom Train Network's YouTube channel. Subscribe to The Fix and the Freedom Train. And now, Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tober. All three shows are available for you to subscribe to on iTunes and Google Play. The Freedom Train Network is growing. And just this past Thursday, our newest show, Lessons from the Screen, with host Patrick Irvin, just dropped this past Thursday. So you make sure you go to the website and you listen to it, Lessons from the Screen from Patrick Irvin. And it too, will be available on iTunes and Google Play real soon. So it's going down. It's going down. In the world of sports, let's talk about it. We just come through this. This is the tail end of this Thanksgiving weekend. And you know, when the Thanksgiving weekend happened, all the stuff leading up to it, going through the weekend and after the weekend, there's a lot that happens. We got the time for it to happen, so it happens. So, as you all know, I start with my HBCU spotlight, and I'm going to follow this up with some HBCU news. All right, so our spotlight goes to the Bayou Classic as a whole and the Grambling Tigers for their victory in the Bayou Classic over the Southern University Jaguars, right? So, basically, the game was a thriller that ended in a 30-21 victory for the Tigers of the Grambling, right? And basically, that fourth quarter came down to a back and forth between the two teams. It was a tight football game. Southern was up. Gramblin's up, Southern's up, Gramblin's up. They're going back and forth. They're scrapping. And it all turned out to be a great finish in what was the 44th annual Bayou Classic, which is held annually in New Orleans in the Superdome. Now, if you don't know nothing about the Bayou Classic, you tripping. Now, the Bayou Classic is, even though they might not say it, Bayou Classic is one of the biggest college football events of the year, no matter what division, no matter what race, whatever, whatever. The Bayou Classic is huge. Grambling and Southern. Brain got the hot dogs. Brain got the collard greens. Brain got the fried turkey legs. Now, put it like this. The Bayou Classic is like homecomings on steroids. Because it's like two schools' homecomings coming together at once and like a tsunami, two tsunami waves just hitting each other and exploding in black culture and fun and food. And then they're in Louisiana too. Ooh, woo, I know that food good. But back to the game though. So it was truly a great game. And these are the words of Grambling State head coach Broderick Fobbs. Anytime you have two good teams battling, You know it will be a good game. Southern is a well-coached team. Today we made some mistakes and had some key penalties, but overall I'm proud of our guys for continuing to battle. So Southern ends the year 7-4 overall and 5-2 in the SWAC. And then Grambling ends the year 10-1 overall and 7-0 in the SWAC. So this puts a cap on Grambling's good season. Now, I wish Grambling would be going to the playoffs. I'm still trying to understand why a 10-1 Grambling is not in the FCS or the FBS. Yeah, I think it's FBS. Well, why they're not in the playoffs? I'm still trying to wrap my mind around that, why these black college football teams, especially like Grambling and then North Carolina A&T, why aren't they in the playoffs? Like, I know when I was coming up, when FAMU was good, FAMU go to the playoffs. We ain't want FAMU to go, like, one of the games was the Heritage Bowl. Yeah, the Bayou Classic had the Heritage Bowl. We don't want FAMU to go to the Heritage Bowl, because if FAMU go to the Heritage Bowl, that means that you ain't in the playoffs. So I'm trying to figure that out. But anywho, it was a great game. It was a back and forth. So basically, let's say this is the turning point in the game which really helped Grambling win. So I'm going to read this to you. It says, turnovers, turnovers, and turnovers. It all started with the first play from scrimmage. Jatarius Pouncey picked off Howell, and Grambling State cashed that into 7 points. But if you thought that was the difference, how about the fact that the Tigers turned their missed field goal into another 7 points and led 14-0 in the third quarter? Pouncey wasn't done as he added a blocked field goal to keep Grambling State on top with the 17-7 lead in the third quarter. Southern was able to cash in on the only Grambling State turnover to cut the margin to 17-14 in the third quarter. The Tigers sealed the game late off of two Jaguar turnovers. The first came when Brandon Varner sacked Howard and forced a fumble. He also recovered the fumble. The second came with a minute 23 left in the game when Diamante Johnson picked off Howard. Grambling State took a knee in the final two plays to pick up his third consecutive Bayou victory. So, give you a little numbers. Grambling State had 17 first downs, 293 total yards of offense, including 171 passing yards. Southern had 19 first downs, 303 total yards, and 198 passing yards. Devontae Kincaid of Southern went 14-30 for 293 and no interceptions. And Martez Carter ran for 92 yards on 21 carries. So, you know, it was kind of back and forth. Grambling came in ranked number 12 in the FCS coaches poll and number 13 in the FCS top 25 poll. Number one in the Sports Network Black College Football poll, and number two in the Box Throw Coaches and Media poll. So, I don't know. So, well, okay. Now, Grambling has to play Alcorn State in the SWAC Championship next Saturday, next weekend. So, we're going to – and that's – that game is set for 3:30 p.m. next Saturday. So I guess I don't know. I don't know if the playoffs have started. I need to check further into that. But I do want these teams to be going to the playoffs. But one time for Grambling State, for going into the Bayou Classic, an annual game, a great game, a big game, then coming out with the victory and you know, doing what they do. Because, you know, if you ain't winning these classic games, you ain't talking about nothing. So, you know, as always, got the little man in the little shirt. Hey, man, show them some love. Show them some love. Grambling State coming in and getting that victory in the Bayou Classic. All right, so up next for Grambling is the SWAC Championship. So Alcorn State, Grambling State, SWAC Championship next Saturday at 3:30. It's going down. It's going down. So, yeah, it's going down. So let's move on. HBCU news, right? I don't know what's going on in I guess it's football, but I know I originally want to talk about this because, you know, last week or a couple weeks ago, I talked about FAMU, the athletic director at FAMU, Milton Overton, who left the school to go to Kennesaw State. So, Alex Wood is the head coach, well, was the head coach, and I say was the head coach at FAMU. And now Alex Wood has resigned as the head football coach of FAMU. Another disappointing season under the belt. Another loss to Bethune-Cookman. I can't remember the last time we beat Bethune-Cookman. And because, you know, in this game, FAMU blew a 14-point fourth quarter lead. And from my understanding, as talking to people, coach went into protective mode within the fourth quarter, too early in the game, and went too conservative, and it just didn't turn out good because FAMU lost yet again. So let me read this to you. Alex Wood resigns as FAMU's head coach effective Monday. Woods have served FAMU athletics with honor, and he has worked to help rebuild the Rattler football program during the past 3 years. Athletic Milton Overton said, in the press release, we thank him for his dedication and service. Yeah, but you left too, Milton. Wood, who was hired before the start of the 2015 season, was the final year, was in the final year of a 3-year agreement. So they wasn't going to bring him back anyway. So he probably already knew that. That's why he said, forget it. In 3 seasons at FAMU, and this is not the good part, in 3 seasons, Wood has only won 8 games and lost 25. The Rattlers went 1-10 in 2015. 4-7 in 2016 and 3-8 this season, 2017. That won't get it done in middle school. So, you know, FAMU got to look for a new head coach and a new athletic director. Edwin Potter, who's a former FSU player, will serve as the interim coach. For FAMU. So, one of the biggest problems with FAMU is straight instability, man. Keeping athletic directors, keeping coaches, keeping coaching staffs. But FAMU messed up from the top bottom, from the top on down, from the president's seat on down. One of the things that make me mad about FAMU is there are a lot of people, the alumni, who don't know what they're talking about, have no idea what they're doing, and they are some of the problems that, like, FAMU has stability problems, period. And it's also showing in the athletic program. And I'ma just say it. FAMU, it's time to get off the nigga shit. It's time to stop the nigga shit, FAMU. It's time to stop the nigga shit, man. I'm not going to go fully into detail because it's got to be on code, but it's time to get off the nigga shit, FAMU. It's time to find real stability within the institution so we can have real stability within the athletic programs. Now, you have other athletic programs who have stability because they are not continuously firing their coaches. Now, you can't tell me that amongst these other programs that are successful, that the coaches are boasting like impressive winning seasons year after year, other than like the track team and like cross country team, FAMU track, cross country, FAMU volleyball team. But other than that, the baseball team is now starting to come back around because they got a coach who's a good coach, and they're actually letting them coach. But see, football is a whole nother beast in black college football. And with the football program, first of all, I feel like these schools have to be a little more patient with these coaches. But you also have to be able to put things into perspective. What's making recruits want to come to FAMU? Why should I want to come to FAMU? And that's for any program, but right now I'm talking about FAMU and that instability, because now we just lost another coach. And of course, Alex Wood was going to go. But it's like, we're talking about the same school who hired Earl Holmes. Earl Holmes, if you don't know who he is, Earl Holmes, in my opinion, is a Hall of Fame caliber middle linebacker. He played, I think, 12 to 15 seasons, played most of his career for the Pittsburgh Steelers, then he played for the Detroit Lions. He graduated FAMU in, I think, 94. He throughout his career as a linebacker, most of the seasons he played, he led his teams in tackle. And we're talking about Pittsburgh Steelers football, right? And he led teams in tackle with Greg Lloyd and LeVon Kirkland and them. Earl Holmes was out there. Now, as a coach, Earl Holmes ain't had no business coaching FAMU. Now, FAMU hasn't had real stability since the firing or the letting go or the resigning, whatever happened, of Billy Joe. When Coach Billy Joe left FAMU, they brought in Joe Taylor. And hell, last week, Joe Taylor cussing his players out, calling them thugs and all that stuff there at the school that he's athletic director at. But after Billy Joe, things have not been great at FAMU. Instability within the athletic director position and in the head football coach position. We got to do better. We have to stop trying to get. First of all, fam, you can't go after coaches the same way a Michigan go after a coach, or the same way a Florida go after a coach. That you're not there. You need to get a coach who has the ability to not only turn around that program by bringing talent in, but also turn around that program by bringing money in. You need resources and talent to compete, and those two you are lacking. Resources and talent. Come on, FAMU. Let's get it together. And that's what I ain't gonna spend to, because I don't want to rant, because I ain't in my rant yet. But I'm ramping up for my goddamn rant. But that's FAMU. And it's not just FAMU. It's a host of other black colleges that are that the coaches have either resigned or have been fired. So, I mean, and it's just going down. So Mississippi Valley State releases coach Rick Comley after four seasons. Delaware State fires softball coach and athletic director. I told you about Alex Wood. Longtime Arkansas Pine Bluff coach Monty Coleman will not return next year. James Sprouty is out as Alabama A&M head coach. So, you know, it's happening all over. Like, a lot of teams are having to start over. So it's not just FAMU, but there's a lot of other teams that have to start them. All right, so go further into my HBCU news. So let me just read the headline to you. Because there's some crazy stuff, and I saw the video the other day. So Tennessee State football player dismissed from team after punching strength coach. What in the hell? Now, I saw the video. I don't know what led up to the altercation. I don't know what words were exchanged, anything. But all I know, the player came up, basically stole on the coach, punched him twice in the face, and the coach got dropped. The coach fell. He was unconscious for a minute. You could tell the coach really wasn't expecting it. Coach was not prepared to get punched in the face by this big, soft, sister-ass player at Tennessee State. So let me read you that, read you some information, right? Tennessee State football player was dismissed from the team and expelled from the university after punching the team's strength and conditioning coach during a recent game. Now think about it. Senior defensive end Latrell Lee, he punched the coach during the game. So Latrell Lee said, fuck life. Fuck everything. I'm going out like a G. I guess he said, I ain't going to miss my chance to be no real nigga, right? Well, Latrell, you tripping. He was involved with an altercation with Tennessee State strength and conditioning coach T.J. Greenstone while on the sideline during last Saturday's game versus Southeast Missouri. In a video that has widely circulated online, Lee, who has started two games this season for the Tigers, was captured punching Greenstone, a former Vanderbilt football player, twice in the face before the coach fell to the ground. An explanation for what began the altercation is unknown. Lee, who did not appear in Saturday's game, played in 36 games during his career. Through nine games this season, Lee has tallied 18 tackles and 3.5 tackles for loss. He was majoring. This fool was majoring in criminal justice. What? And was named the Ohio Valley Conference Commissioner's Honor Roll. So he messed that up. Wow. And it's a video, like, it's a literal video of, like, the actual player, like, running up on the coach and busting him in the face. Like, I'm looking at the video now, like, oh, I thought he hit him two times. Now, he ain't hit him two times. He hit him one. He caught him with a good one. Caught him with a good sucker punch to the face. Latrell Lee, you are stupid. Are you that emotionally unstable, Latrell Lee? Are you really that emotionally unstable? The end game, you got your shirt tucked in, and you got your helmet on, and you run up behind the coach, and you bust him in the face. Wow, Latrell. Like, for real. Come on, man. We have to do better. Like, Latrell, I don't know what's going on in your life. I hope this doesn't derail your life long term. But Latrell, that is not how you handle situations, boy. The hell is wrong with you, Latrell? And you're gonna run up on a man behind, kind of behind him and steal on him. You ain't even approach him like a man and ask for a straight fade. You're going to run up on the man and sucker punch the man from behind. Come on, Latrell. And now you done messed up your chances. Well, I ain't going to say you messed up, but you have certainly delayed and derailed your train to the top. You certainly have, Latrell. And then you've caused this damage and this harm to this coach. Now, I would sue the hell out your ass. That's what I would do, Latrell. I would sue you. Ain't no way in hell you're going to steal off on me and I'm going to sue you, Latrell. Come on, Latrell. Come on. You cannot do this. Look, we have to do better at working with these new men or working with men, period, on dealing with our emotions. But that is not the way you deal with your emotions. You're angry at somebody, you find a better way. So, yeah, man, we got to do better in making sure that we're raising and rearing our men. Just that, what Latrell just did, was uncalled for, straight bitch made. Latrell, use a whole hoe for that. Use a straight whole hoe for that. You can't go around putting your hands on somebody because you mad. Nope. Not going to do it. Not going to happen. Can't win like that. Nope. All right. So that's it for our HBCU news, right? So it's going down in HBCU. We got good news. We got bad news. HBCU land. But hey. So continuing to talk about football. As I stated a couple shows back, or probably more than a couple shows back, Texas A&M's head coach Kevin Sumlin is on the hot seat. And I personally don't think Kevin Sumlin will make it through the week. He's already been on the hot seat as far as losing his job as the head coach of Texas A&M because they feel like his teams are not living up to the hype and the billing. And basically, in big-time college football, winning 5, 7, 8, 9 games, sometimes 10 games. Now you can have an 11-win season. Who was that? Jim Moore, I think, had 11-2 for UCLA and was fired. So Kevin Sumlin is in Texas, in the SEC West, and they're not necessarily winning the way they're supposed to because I think that first year in the SEC, when they first got to the SEC, they only lost. They went 11-2. 2012 in their SEC debut, they went 11-2. And it was followed by 3 consecutive 8-5 seasons. And then this year they're 7-5. Texas A&M, they lost yesterday. They got their ass whooped yesterday, basically, by LSU 42-21. And one of the knocks on him is they haven't been able to win the big games. They haven't been able to finish the season strong. Well, a couple of knocks. Not winning the big games, not finishing the season strong, and not being able to maintain top quarterback talent. Basically, Kevin Sumlin was at his best when Johnny Manziel was his quarterback, and that's not good. That's really not good. Now, Kevin Sumlin is an excellent football coach. But, everything hasn't been working out fully like it did for that 2012 season when they went 11-2. So, I do expect Kevin Sumlin to be fired throughout this week. Now, the reports were saying that Kevin may not make it through the night. So after they lost to LSU, it's like, well, come back the next morning and he should be fired. So right now, reports are not indicating that he has been fired, but reports are saying that the firing is going to happen, and it's inevitable, especially with this loss to LSU. I do wish Kevin Sumlin the best. I just hope Kevin Sumlin don't think that white people really love him like that. I hope he was paying attention to Charlie Strong and what happened with Charlie Strong and don't think that white folk, especially in Texas, white folk really love him like that. But he's a good coach. Kevin Sumlin is definitely a good coach. So if he do get fired, he will find another job. He can recruit. So he will find another job. Hey, Kevin, come to FAMU. Come to FAMU, Kevin Sumlin. I'm just saying. I'm just going to put that out there. You got Randy Shannon, Kevin Sumlin. People like that, FAMU, can they pay you? Now, the question is, can they pay? I don't know. But it's not working out the way they expected it to at Texas A&M. So, will he actually be? If he does not get fired, I will be wholly surprised. As of right now, all the information says that there has not been a meeting created or scheduled between the two sides, between Sumlin and Texas A&M. But nevertheless, reports are saying that they expect him to be fired. I personally don't expect him to make it through the week. If he does, I will be surprised. I will be happy that the man is able to keep his job, but I don't expect that to happen. We shall see, though. We shall see what's going on in Sumlin land and Texas A&M. So, like I said, Texas A&M is a middle-of-the-pack SEC West team. You expect them to have some good wins, but they are not necessarily living up to the billing that that you would expect. So, we'll see. But Kevin, man, like I say, I wish you well in the future. I wish you well in your present. And you're a good coach. And even if you do get fired, you will find another job. Don't even much worry about it. All right, so Moving on to football news. Now, I was covering this because it was interesting. I was really trying to see what was happening. So, Chip Kelly, football coach Chip Kelly with that offense, with that crazy Oregon offense. If you don't know who Chip Kelly is, I don't know why, but especially if you call yourself a sports person, you don't know who Chip Kelly. So, basically, when Oregon was good, when Oregon football was good, when you first started seeing the different types of jerseys and different uniforms per game and everything, Chip Kelly is the coach that basically rebranded Oregon as the school it was and as the mystique that Oregon has. Chip Kelly rebranded that, and that offense that he has helped that. So he left Oregon, went to the San Francisco 49ers. Went to the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles didn't work out. He went to the 49ers. That didn't work out. And now Chip Kelly was doing broadcasting. I say was doing broadcasting because two coaching positions came available, UCLA and Florida. And we were waiting to see which he chooses. Me personally, I think he made the right choice. Chip Kelly chose UCLA. I did not think that Chip Kelly and that offense would fit into big-time, big-boy college football that is the SEC, that is the University of Florida. I thought that he would ruin SEC, real SEC football, by bringing in that style of offense because the way that offense plays, it doesn't recruit SEC talent. It recruits Pac-12 talent. So that's why when Oregon and those teams that Chip Kelly would take to these championship games, they would get dominated up front because especially the offensive line is a quick, fast offensive line. So when you get a defensive line like Alabama or LSU or even the Florida defensive line, who's not only quick and fast, but they're strong and agile, so bigger, faster, stronger, they're going to kill that offensive line. That's not going to work in SEC football, but that will work in Pac-12 football. Now, Florida needs a coach. UCLA got their coach. Now, we thought that Jim McElwain was going to be able to enhance the offense in Florida. He didn't. When Treon Harris is your quarterback, you're not recruiting well. Franks, the quarterback now for Florida, you're not good. Blackman, the true freshman at FSU, is better than you. But nevertheless, UCLA has their coach. Now, I do think Chip Kelly will be successful at UCLA. He can coach, he can recruit, but he's a West Coast kind of mother lover. So, him being in UCLA would be motherfucking perfect. And how I just come back and say motherfucker after I said mother lover. I don't know, but fuck it, I just did, right? But I do think that would help UCLA. That's going to hurt USC and Stanford and some of those other schools in their recruiting, bringing Chip Kelly back. Because now Chip Kelly was good at getting talent from California to Eugene, Oregon. Now he's in L.A. So Chip Kelly is going to do a good job of keeping that L.A. talent in L.A., but not only just keeping it in L.A., but bringing it to University of California, Los Angeles, which is UCLA, taking players away from USC. UCLA needs to improve, bang. But once again, just like anything else, man, these schools need stability, and if you ain't have stability in these schools, you ain't really talk about too much. So Chip Kelly gone to UCLA, and Florida still looking for a coach. I read that Florida is looking at UCLA's head coach Scott Frost. The last time I saw Scott Frost, I believe they were getting ran through. He was a quarterback from Nebraska, and they were getting ran through by Miami. I think that's the last time I saw Scott Frost. Now he's coaching, and UCLA and Wisconsin are the only two undefeated teams that are left. So, I think UCF is undefeated. I believe so, but UCLA, I mean, not UCLA, but Wisconsin and UFC. So, it's amazing the coaching carousels. It's amazing the way the system works. And we have to understand all this, everything that goes on is a business decision, right? Football, sports, all that stuff is a business decision. And people have to stop acting as if when you come into college and you come to these sports, you're just an athlete. Oh, you're just a student athlete. No, that's a business. You're a businessman. See how these coaches going to look for this money? The businessman, and I'm right. UCF is 8-0, and they will be playing Memphis in the American Athletic Conference Championship game next Saturday. So that's going to happen. But seriously, though, college football is a business. And we got to start treating it as such. Have to start understanding what goes on, what happens, and why things work out the way they work out. These coaches looking for money, and these players need to understand that this is a business, and you are money. But one time for Chip Kelly over at UCLA. I don't know what's going on with Florida. We're going to see what happened with them, Scott Frost. Randy Shannon is their defensive coordinator. I doubt Florida hires him. I doubt Florida hire a black coach ever, but, you know. That's what's going on. So Chip Kelly is on to UCLA, and we're going to see how that works out. I look forward to seeing Pac-12 football next year. I don't expect no defense, but I do expect a lot of good explosive offense. I want to see that offense, man. I want to see the offense with that UCLA talent. That's what I want to see. That's going to be good. That's going to be nice. So, Moving on. Still in football. Now we talk about the NFL. So now we are at at this time of year where the nominees for the 2018 NFL Hall of Fame class have come out. And, you know, this is a hard one. So let me give you the nominees. We have Hines Ward, Everson Walls, Brian Urlacher, Richard Seymour, Simeon Rice, Terrell Owens, Leslie O'Neill, John Lynch, Kevin Mawai, Carl Melkenberg, Randy Moss, Ray Lewis, Ty Law, Jimmy Johnson, Edgerrin James, Adam Faneca, Torrey Holt, Steve Hutchinson, Joe Jacoby, Brian Dawkins, Roger Craig, Don Carell, Leroy Butler, Steve Atwater, Rondé Barber, Tony Boselli, and Isaac Bruce. I'm glad I'm not making these decisions for real, because these are hard decisions. So let's say they have to pick 15 players to be in the Hall of Fame out of all of these. So I'm going to go through the names again. They have pick 15. Steve Atwater, Rondé Barber, Tony Boselli, Isaac Bruce, Leroy Butler, Don Carell, Roger Craig, Brian Dawkins, Alan Faneca, Torrey Holt, Steve Hutchinson, Joe Jacoby, Edgerrin James, Jimmy Johnson, Ty Law, Ray Lewis, John Lynch, Kevin Mawai, Carl Melkenberg, Randy Moss, Leslie O'Neill, Terrell Owens, Simeon Rice, Richard Seymour, Brian Urlacher, Everson Walls, and Hines Ward. All right, so I'm going to do the fixes, Joseph Ward, the fixes, selection of my 2018 Hall of Fame players. So, first off, Tony Boselli, offensive lineman, Tony Boselli is in the Hall of Fame. I'm writing this down, too. So, Tony Boselli is in my Joseph Ward Hall of Fame. So, he was off this list. If I have to go just straight up off the list. So, I'm just going, first players I'm doing just like no-brainers. Right? To me, no-brainers. Terrell Owens. Randy Moss. Ray Lewis. Even though Ray Lewis been cooning like a mug, I can't take away what he was as a linebacker and how great he was. Probably the greatest middle linebacker, right? Kevin Mawai. I got to go with Kevin Mawai. Kevin Mawai was a hell of a lineman. So Kevin Mawai, of course, like I said, Tony Boselli, T.O., Randy Moss, Ray Lewis, Kevin Mawai. That's just off the top. Brian Urlacher, just off the top as I'm going through the list. Just off the top, just straight up, they just need to be in there. So, all right. So after that, just straight up off the top, because this is hard, man. This is hard. So I would say Alan Faneca. I do think Alan Faneca deserves to make it. So I put Alan Faneca, Steve Atwater, Roger Craig, Edgerrin James. I do think Edgerrin James deserved to make it. Brian Dawkins, Jimmy Johnson. I put Jimmy Johnson in there for what he did for the Cowboys and that little bit of time and things and everything that he did. Jimmy Johnson. Would I put Richard Seymour? I don't know, because I'm looking at Richard Seymour and then I'm looking at John Lynch, right? Torrey Holt would make it for me. I would put Torrey Holt over Isaac Bruce. I would. I thought Torrey Holt was better than Isaac Bruce. Let me see. John Lynch. Richard Seymour. I put Seymour. And then it's out of John. I'm thinking out of John Lynch. And John Lynch, Isaac Bruce, and Rondé Barber. Who was the most important to that team? John Lynch, Isaac Bruce. I would say Rondé Barber. I have to put Rondé Barber over John Lynch because I think John Lynch was important, but the Buccaneers showed that they could still do that without John Lynch. Rondé Barber was the last. After he left, the Buccaneers secondary just went down. So for me, if I had to go off to Joseph Ward, I don't know who Don Correll is. I'm going to be honest. Don Correll, I don't really know who that is. Joe Jacoby, I really don't know who that is. Carl Malkenberg, I don't really know who that is. I know who Everson Walls is, but not that much. Leslie O'Leal, I don't know. Hines Ward, I like Hines. I like Ty Law. I like John Lynch. I like Steve Hutchinson. I like Alan. I put Alan Faneca. I like Steve Hutchinson. No. I'm putting Steve Hutchinson. Okay, after Steve Hutchinson, I'm putting Steve Hutchinson in over Alan Faneca. Because you got to remember Steve Hutchinson for his Seahawks days and his Vikings days. But, yeah, so, I mean, this is a great list. Randy Moss should be, he first ballot. T.O. should be first ballot. Ray Lewis, first ballot. Straight up. Tony Boselli, first. He should be in there. It's not Tony Boselli's first ballot. Straight up. So, this is a damn good list. Hines Ward. Like, I feel bad. I feel bad Hines Ward ain't make my list. I do. I feel bad. Simeon Rice ain't make. Well, I don't feel bad. Simeon Rice ain't make it, but I feel bad. Hines Ward ain't make my list. I like Hines because Hines Ward lied, but I can't. I don't know what's Hines Ward more valuable than because when we talk about receivers, T.O., Randy Moss. Torrey Holt. Was Hines Ward more valuable than Torrey Holt? I'm not even going to get into the T.O. Randy Moss. But I don't, because they both won Super Bowls. Hines, I think Hines got two. Torrey Holt was special, though, man. I can't put Hines in over Torrey Holt. I just can't. Torrey Holt was special. But Hines would make it next year. But Hines Ward would be my honorable mention. But Tony Boselli, Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, Ray Lewis, Kevin White, Brian Urlacher, Steve Hutchinson, Steve Atwater, Roger Craig. But you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to put Hines Ward in over Roger Craig. I'm going to just do that. I'm going to put Hines Ward in over Roger Craig. So Hines Ward, Edgerrin James. Well, you know what? Edgerrin James can wait. Edgerrin James could wait. And I think I would have to put Ty Law. Would I put Ty Law in over, yeah, over John Lynch? Yeah. Edgerrin James would wait. Then Ty Law. I put Ty Law in. Then Brian Dawkins, Jimmy Johnson, Torrey Holt, Richard Seymour. So let me take Richard Seymour out and put John Lynch in. I take Richard Seymour out. I put John Lynch in and Rondé Barber. So Rondé Barber, John Lynch, Torrey Holt, Jimmy Johnson, Brian Dawkins, Ty Law. Steve Hutt. No, Ty Law. Who else? What I have? And Hines Ward. I'm tripping. Hines Ward. Steve Atwater. Steve Hutchinson. Brian Urlacher. Kevin McGuire. Ray Lewis. Randy Moss. T.O. And Tony Boselli. I put Tony Boselli at the top. I mean, come on, man. It's Tony Boselli. Tony Boselli was that left tackle who, like, held it down. Like, nobody was getting sacks on Boselli. And this was when the Jaguars was good. So that's what I would go with. If I had to choose 15 out of these people, out of this list, that's who I would go with as far as my 2018 Hall of Fame list. You don't have to like it or agree with it, but damn it. It's my 2018. That's my 2018 NFL Hall of Fame list. All right. Now, let's talk about some college football, because a lot of things have happened, and a lot of things have twisted and turned, and I don't know what the hell is going on no more. Right? So this past weekend, we saw number 14, Mississippi State. This was Thursday, November 3rd, 23rd, November 23rd. We saw Ole Miss upset number 14, Mississippi State in the 31-28 victory, which started off a week of upsets. And how the hell did that happen? Right? So the first upset, and how the hell did this happen? Well, I know how this happened. But the first upset is number 2 Miami falls to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a 5-7 team. This is a horrible, horrible loss for Miami, who was the number 2 team. Now, Miami is 10-1 on the season, and they have their one loss in their conference. And they will be meeting Clemson in the ACC championship game. That could help, but this loss is a horrible loss. I said it before on this show, Miami cannot rely on turnovers solely to be their spark. The offense has to come out firing, and Rozier did not. He didn't. The offense didn't. Mark Richt, you got to get it together. You cannot just depend on the turnover chain. Just solely depending on the turnover chain will get you beat, especially by talent that's better, more composed teams. Now, Miami was able to force, I think, two turnovers. They were able to force two turnovers. But they still was not able to get that offense going, right? The offense just wasn't there. They only scored 14 points. A touchdown in the second quarter and a touchdown in the fourth quarter. And it just wasn't happening. 187 passing yards and 45 rushing yards. 187 passing yards and 45 rushing yards. Rozier is not a good quarterback. He's okay, but he's not a good quarterback. So the way Miami came out extra flat, and them coming out extra flat got them beat by Pitt. And Pitt is always down to beat somebody. Didn't they beat Clemson earlier this year? 24-14, Miami loses to Pitt. The kickoff, more of what would lead to a weekend of what the hell, man, and I don't know. So TCU decided they want to get back to their winning ways and play a little defense, and they beat Baylor 45-22, which puts TCU at 10-2 on the season. South Florida gets their second loss on the year as they lose a 49-42 thriller, real good game, to the number 15 and still undefeated UCF Knights of Central Florida. Number 25 Virginia Tech beat Virginia, their rival, and this was rivalry weekend. They beat Virginia 10-0, and that puts Virginia Tech at 9-3 on the season and Virginia at 6-6, so Virginia will be going to a bowl game, but a 10-0 victory. Alabama loses to Auburn. Number one, Alabama came out flat on offense, and Auburn bust them in their mouth and kept hitting them in their mouth. Auburn came in, they was not scared of Alabama, and they came and bust them in their mouth. So Jalen Hurts went 13 for 23, 177 yards, one touchdown, had 47.5% QBR. Auburn came out with a good game plan to mixing the running and passing, same as they usually do. Jay Stidham, their quarterback, went 21 for 28 for 237, no touchdowns, no picks. But their running back, Kay Johnson, had one pass to 3 yards and a touchdown. They did the Tebow jump pass on Alabama. They just kept busting Alabama in their mouth. Now, Alabama did rack up 209 rushing yards, but only one touchdown, while Auburn had 168 rushing yards and two touchdowns. 168 receiving yards usually would cut it, but not in a team like Auburn. Auburn had 240 receiving yards. So, turnovers. Alabama lost one fumble. Auburn lost one fumble. I don't know. Auburn was the better team. Auburn came out ready to play, and they bust Alabama in their mouth, and that's just what it is. So, Alabama looked slow on offense. They looked like their feet were in the mud, and they just can't really get out and really get where they and really do what they were really needing to do in this game, and that really cost them. So that shakes up the whole college football picture. Now Clemson continued their winning ways with a 34-10 win over South Carolina, and South Carolina is ranked number 24. So that's a good win for Clemson coming to the college football polls that's going to come out on Tuesday. Oklahoma helped themselves with a 59-31 victory over a 7-5 West Virginia. Now West Virginia is not ranked, but that helps Oklahoma. Wisconsin continued their winning ways, and they're still undefeated. They're 12-0 in the Big Ten, but they're still ranked number 5 coming into this weekend. So they beat Minnesota 31-0. And I'm going to talk more about Minnesota a little later, because Minnesota just garbage across the board. I'm going to talk about Alabama and Minnesota basketball a little later. Minnesota just garbage across the board, right? So the thing about Wisconsin is they're undefeated, but they have no good wins. So They're going to play Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship game coming next weekend. So we'll see how that may help them. Georgia is going to meet, I believe Georgia's going to meet Auburn in the SEC Championship game this upcoming weekend, because with Auburn's win over Alabama, and then Georgia continued their winning ways. They beat Georgia Tech 38-7, so that puts Georgia at 11-1 on the season. So they are going to the SEC Championship game, representing the SEC East. So Auburn, Georgia, get ready for it. That's the SEC Championship game. We thought it was, you know how we do. We all thought that it was going to be Alabama and who else. But this year in the SEC Championship game, we're going to have Auburn and Georgia. So one time for Georgia, one time for Auburn for getting to the championship game. So Notre Dame lost a game. Notre Dame, number 8, Notre Dame, they lost to number 21 Stanford, 38-20. And if you know anything about Stanford, I ain't even looked at the stats yet. If you know anything about Stanford, you know they ran that ball. So Notre Dame had 261 passing yards. Wimbush went 11 for 28, 249 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 picks. That's for Notre Dame. So Costello, KJ Costello for Stanford, went 14 for 22, 176 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. Love for Stanford, 20 carries, 125 yards. Wimbush for Notre Dame had 62 yards. Wimbush just ain't been going good. And them losses and things, Wimbush just ain't been going good. So Notre Dame gets their third loss on the season. And Notre Dame at one point, a couple weeks ago, a lot of people were saying that Notre Dame could be seen as the best team and they deserve to be in that playoff, but not no more. So the 2-loss Ohio State beats a 4-loss Michigan in the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. And the score was 31-20, and Ohio State will meet Wisconsin next week, as I said, in the Big Ten championship game. Penn State keeping their, no, they're going to a bowl game, but they beat Maryland, and Penn State's number 10 coming to the weekend. They beat Maryland 66-3. Maryland went from the ACC, they were garbage in the ACC, and they garbage in the Big Ten. Washington State loses their third game to Washington in a 41-14 victory for the University of Washington. That puts them on 10. That puts them at 10-2 on the season, and that takes Washington down to 9-3. Michigan State, number 16, Michigan State coming to the weekend beat Rutgers 40-7. As I said earlier, LSU, number 18, coming to the weekend beat Texas A&M 45-21. Oklahoma State, as if they should, beat Kansas 58-17. I still want to know who was that one team that lost to Kansas. Memphis continued their winning ways, beat East Carolina 70-13. As I said, Memphis is going to play UCF in their championship game, the conference championship game. Northwestern beat Illinois 42-7. And to sum it all up, Fresno State beat number 23, Boise State, who was number 23 coming to the weekend, 28-17. And that wraps up our weekend of college football. We're waiting on these polls to come out because we have no idea. So I know Clemson, you know, like coming in, you know, Clemson, Auburn, Georgia, maybe Wisconsin, Alabama still in that top 6. But it's a lot of things that's going to be scrambled. So we're going to see Tuesday when the polls come out, see who's who, what's what, and what's going on, and going into championship weekend. Because after championship weekend is where we really got to start having these discussions about who's in and who's out, because that's when everything going to fall into place. All right, so in other football news, now I didn't know this, so this actually came out last year, so I'm a year late on this, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. Because, you know, I've been making mentions about the culture of rape and sexual assault throughout the various mediums and platforms I've been speaking on. America has, America has adopted the culture of rape. The culture of rape is a part of what made America what it is. Because they had to rape and pillage the indigenous people who were on the lands, right? So, former NFL star Darren Sharper was sentenced last year to 20 years in prison, to a 20-year prison term in the same courthouse where he first admitted drugging and raping women in four states. Now, let me read this, because this is some sick shit that Darren Sharper did. Darren Sharper need his ass for. Use a bitch for this, Darren Sharper. Whole host that, straight up. Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Use a fuck, nigga, fuck, boy, fuck, everything for this, right? Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Michael Pastor denounced Sharper's honorable conduct and disgraceful abuse of trust during the hearing that concealed precautions that secured prosecutions that unmasked the former All-Pro safety and Super Bowl champ as a serial rapist. Under the terms of a plea deal negotiated with prosecutors in four states, Sharper would be eligible for parole in now 7 years because California law requires he serve half his sentence, and he has already been behind bars for more than 10 years, 2 years since the arrest, 3 years now. But he will probably serve more time if an appeals court upholds an 18-year prison sentence handed down by a New Orleans federal judge who rejected the deal as too lenient. Sharper has appealed the harsher sentence. Sharper, who's 42 now, sat quietly in the court in Orange County in Orange jail scrubs and never addressed the court or two emotional victims who spoke about evenings that began innocently enough partying with friends but turned into nightmares they could no longer escape after he secretly slipped drugs into their shot glasses and basically. Both women blacked out and later awoke to the groggy, to the groggy reality that something had gone terribly wrong that they couldn't immediately comprehend in their drug-induced state. One of them said, "I started vomiting, my head was pounding, and I had trouble seeing clearly." This rape was conducted. Come on, man, how you gonna rape somebody on Martin Luther King's birthday on January 14th? And this happened in 2014. This woman said it was the worst night of her life. The second woman said, "The only good thing about the situation is that this disgusting low-life human will be sent to prison for many years and is likely he will never be able to do this to another woman again. I hope this scumbag will now feel as worthless as he has made me feel." Sharper has a history of raping women. Sharper was working with the NFL Network at the time when the charges started coming out. Wow, Sharper. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what to begin with this. I don't know where to begin with this with Darren Sharper. But we have a lot of fucked up people in our society. A lot of sick ass fucked up people in our society. And Darren Sharper was in a position of power in a sense, being that he's in an athletic realm that can protect him. The athletic realm protects him more than him being a man. Being a viable asset within the athletic realm protects him more than being a man. It damn sure protects him more than being a black man. But I'm glad he got his pussy ass caught. We got to reconstruct the way we get out, we socialize, normalize, and just raise men in this country. We got to reconstruct the way we raise women in this country. We have to reconstruct the way everything goes on, because there's a pervasive culture of rape that men and women engage in this culture, in this country. There's a pervasive culture of rape that both men and women engage in and uphold in this country. It's not just a man thing. Anybody come out just looking at it as a man thing, you're not even being real about stopping sexual assaults in this country. Men and women have indulged in this culture of rape in this country. And it needs to stop. It has to stop. We have to start addressing these things more and more. But it is not okay for you to take advantage of somebody because you feel like you should. Come on, Darren Sharple, we're thoroughly disappointed in your bitch ass. That is some whole ass shit you have done. And I hope you pay the full consequences of your actions. It is not okay to do that to somebody, whole motherfucker. It's not. God damn. We got to do something different. We got to do something different. So Darren, at least Darren Sharper is arrested. He's in prison. He's serving his time. So, talking more about sexual assault, it's coming out that now Gabby Douglas and other women have been assaulted by their coach, Dr. Larry Nassar. Three-time Olympic gold medalist Gabby Douglas has become the third prominent American gymnast to claim that she was sexually abused by former U.S. team Dr. Larry Nassar. No, he was a doctor, not a coach, excuse me. Douglas's allegations follow statements by former USA Gymnastics teammates Michaela Moroni and Ali Raisman, who claimed that Nassar abused them during their careers. The 21-year-old Douglas recently drew fierce criticism on social media for her response to a tweet by Raisman, which said, "The way the woman dresses does not give the man right to sexually abuse her." And this is what that Gabby Douglas said, which is true. I don't give a fuck what a woman got on. Nobody has the right to do anything to anybody, no matter what the fuck they got going on. If you got a problem with that, you a stupid bitch, and I'll fight you. So this is what Gabby is saying. Just to be clear, just because a woman does a sexy photo shoot or wears a sexy outfit does not give a man the right to shame her or to believe her. I mean, does not give a man the right to shame her or not believe her when she comes forward about sexual abuse. That is totally correct. What is wrong with some of you? And when a woman dresses sexy, it does not give a man the right to sexually abuse her ever. Women are allowed to feel sexy and comfortable in their own skin. In fact, I encourage you all to wear what you feel good in. There's nothing wrong with those statements. I would not put up with any woman or girl being ashamed for wearing, for wanting to wear a skirt or a dress or etc. I do not tolerate it. Are we clear? Oh, and one more thing. Stop victim shaming. It's because of you that so many survivors live in fear. What was wrong with that? So now they're saying that it was a they're coming back, and Gabby Douglas has actually apologized for that statement. I'm going to get more into that. So Ali Raisman put a tweet out that said, "We're all in this together. If we're going to create change, we all need your help." But listen to what she's saying, Ali Raisman. See, this is that white girl card against the black girl card. And so the black girl looked like the bad person, even though she's telling the truth. I don't give a fuck what no goddamn woman is wearing. Don't nobody got no motherfucking right to do anything to nobody. I don't give a fuck what no woman wearing. Like, how was that so hard to understand? I don't give a fuck what culture you come from. I don't give a fuck what country you come from, what nationality, what language you speak. I don't give a shit about none of that. Oh, the woman has to respect herself. What about the man respecting himself and the woman? So you mean to tell me that if a woman does not have a bra on and a see-through shirt, she can walk down the street, and some man decides to come up and grab her breast, that's her fault? I will whoop that man's ass. No, that's not her fault. This fool chose to take those actions. That's his fault. Why are we have cultures in other countries where the women are almost totally nude, and they don't have the same issues that we have in America? So we're so civilized in America, we're so civilized that if a woman wears something that's scantily clad, we feel like she should be abused, but we're so civilized. All right, so let me get more into this, because Ali Raisman, shut the fuck up. So Douglas replied to the tweet, which was subsequently deleted, saying women should dress modestly and be classy. Dressing in a provocative sexual way entices the wrong crowd. That does, but that does not take away the fact that a woman should have the ability to wear what she wants to wear. So once again, we're not, because we're, think about it, when we say, because we all fully understand why women can't wear what they want to wear. Let's just be real. Women can't wear what they want to wear because we fear that she's going to be raped by a man. I'm going to say that again. Women can't wear what they want to wear because we fear she's going to be raped by a man. I'm going to say that one more time. Women, we fear women wearing what they want to wear because we fear she's going to be raped by a man. So at what point will the attention be focused on the men? I'll wait. At what point will the attention be focused on the men in this? But also, it has to be looked at both sides, because if Raceman is saying this, then Raceman is reinforcing these underlying currents of this rape culture. Well, you have to dress classy and sexy and all these things. You have to, first of all, what they're doing is they're further shoving down Arabic, Islamic, and European culture down our African throats. That's what they're doing. And that's not to say that Africans did not dress in a different manner, but when we talk about the totality and the whole of the continent, everybody didn't dress the same. First of all, Africa is not a continent, and there's many different cultures, the cultural cues and norms and things. Everybody don't wear clothes. People in tropical climates don't wear clothes. So when we're talking about classy and all these things, man, fuck out of here. In a lengthy message posted to Instagram Tuesday, Douglas apologized for those comments before going on to allege that she too had been abused by Nassar. I didn't view my comments as victim shaming because I know that no matter what you wear, it never gives anyone the right to harass or abuse you. It would be like saying that because of the leotards we wore, it was our fault we were abused by Larry Nassar, Douglas said. I don't publicly share my experiences as well as many other things because for years we were conditioned to stay silent, and honestly, some things were extremely painful. I wholeheartedly support my teammates for coming forward for what happened with them. And I'm gonna read you this last piece of what Gabby Douglas said. First, I want to reiterate my apology for responding the way I did to a comment that one of my teammates posted. Stop that. First of all, stop. Why do black people always got to apologize? Why do black people always got to apologize for speaking truth? Why the white girl don't have to apologize for victim shaming? But the black girl got to apologize for speaking the truth? That's why we need our own. I know some of you may take what I'm about to say as insincere, but I still want to provide context. The day before I commented, I was at an event where hundreds of children and young adults came to spend an evening with me. It was very humbling when many people look up to you as an example. I take my job as a role model very seriously, and I always want to do my best to represent all the best qualities that a role model should embody. I admit that there are times I fall short, but you didn't fall short in this. You didn't fall short. I didn't view my comments as victim shaming because I know that no matter what you wear, it never gives anyone the right to harass or abuse you, which is all true. You didn't victim shame. You did not victim shame. You brought truth to light. It would be like saying that because of the leotard we wore, that it was our fault that we were abused by Larry Nassar. I don't publicly share my experiences as well as many other things because for years we were conditioned to stay silent, and honestly, some things were extremely painful. I wholeheartedly support my teammates for coming forward with what happened to them. I do understand that many of you don't know what I was dealing with, but it is important to me that you at least know this. I do not advocate victim shaming, blaming in any way, shape, or form. I will also never support attacking or bullying anyone on social media or anywhere else. Please forgive me for not being more responsible. I don't even want to read this, but please forgive me for not being more responsible with how I handled the situation. Stop it, Gabby. Gabby, stop it. Gabby, stop groveling at these white folk feet for nothing. You spoke the truth. Stop groveling so the little white girl who's out there talking reckless don't have to say nothing. The white girl don't have to apologize, but you feel like you do? Man, Gabby, part of being a role model as a black woman in this country is being able to take a stand and stand up for what you said. You have to learn that. You have to learn that as a black woman and a person in this community in America, that you have to learn how to stand behind your statements, especially when you're speaking the truth. And I'm standing behind that. You're speaking the truth. Fuck Allie Raisman. Fuck you, little white girl. To every other individual that commented or that commented to or about me hatefully, I apologize that you did not let anybody, she's talking about she let somebody down. You didn't let nobody down. So the little white girl got mad because you spoke the truth and you let everybody down now? Gabby, stop it. Stop it. I would never stop promoting unity, positivity, strength, being courageous, and doing good instead of evil. I've learned from this and I'm determined to be even better. So the white girl don't have to get better? Gabby, take this letter, rip it up, and wipe your ass with it. You do not have to come back saying this stuff because you spoke truth to what was going on. And the white girl got mad, and the white girl used her white girl card on you. Now you apologize. Why do black people always got to apologize when they speak the truth? Why? So when white people get uncomfortable, black people got to go out of our way to make them feel comfortable. That's bullshit. Larry Nassar, you need your fucking ass for. But see, these are the twists and turns, and these are the back and the underlying the things that happen in the culture of rape. The black woman, all of a sudden, is the problem. The black woman is assaulted. The black woman comes out to talk about it. The black woman defends positions from a position that is going to help people. The white girl get mad at what the black girl say, and it's the black girl problem. And we are no longer talking about the white man who around here touching people. Gabby Douglas is now the problem. But we're not talking about the white man who around here feeling on young girls. Look, young 10 and 12 and 11-year-old girls. Larry Nassar, they should cut your penis off. They should cut your penis off, Larry Nassar. You need your ass. They should sew your asshole up and just feed you. Like they said on Wu-Tang, just feed you and feed you and feed you and feed you. And sew your asshole up again. Double stitch your asshole up while they just feed you and feed you and feed you and just pee on you and kick you in your motherfucking face, Larry Nassar. You's a bitch. You about worse than Darren Sharper. All y'all, this culture of rape and sexual violence and things is as American as America. But come on, man. See, I peep how they twist things, and they make the black person the victim. I mean, they make the black person the blame in this. Gabby, you didn't do anything. Larry Nassar is the issue. Larry Nassar is the issue. And the white girl got mad about the way you came out and spoke the truth. And now you feel like you have to apologize. That's crazy, man. It's crazy, 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 crazy. Larry Nassar is the issue. Larry Nassar is the issue. Larry Nassar is the issue. He's sexually assaulting people. Now Gabby Douglas feel like she got to come out on a cleanup campaign. Bullshit. All right, so I want to transition. I want to transition. So, give you a little college basketball real quick. So last night, the University of Alabama played the University of Minnesota in basketball. And at the end of the game, Alabama only had 3 players left on the court. And they almost won. I'm going to say that again. Last night in the basketball game, the University of Alabama played the University of Minnesota in the basketball game. By the end of the game, Alabama only had 3 players left on the team to play. 3 players. Wow. Minnesota had way more than 3 players. But Alabama had lost all but 3 players. And the final score was 89-84. Alabama lost by 5 points. And they played 10 minutes and 50 seconds of the game with only 3 players. So, the Alabama men's basketball team, who was coached by my homeboy, Avery Johnson, they was forced to play with 3 players during a stretch of its game against Minnesota on Saturday after the entire Crimson Tide bench was ejected following a brawl. So, Basically, it was a team fight, a little basketball. You know how basketball fights, they ain't no real fights, but basketball fights, right? So they had a bench clearing brawl, and apparently all the Alabama bench came out. So it's a little video about this, so I'm gonna play the little, well, I know you can't hear, but I'm gonna just play the little video. So the little white boy shoot the three, bam. The white boy for Alabama hit the three. Alabama players tangled up with Minnesota player. Oh, they out there going. They're pushing, they're grabbing. Everybody grabbing and pushing. So all of Alabama's bench comes off the bench and come on the court. So all of Alabama bench comes on the floor as the players out here. You know, they it's a basketball fight. So they pulling and pushing. Oh, number 23 for Alabama put his set up. He tried to square up on number one on Minnesota. So he put his set up. So because Alabama bench left the bench, they all were ejected from the game. Alabama's whole bench. So now Alabama is down to five players. Only five players. So next thing you know, Alabama, two of the five players actually get injured. Like, I'm not making this up. Two of the five remaining players actually get injured. They actually get injured. Like, real life stuff. Like, I'm sitting there watching the sports, and I'm like, man, this ain't real. Two of the five remaining players actually get injured, right? So, for 10 minutes and 50 seconds, Alabama plays, they play Minnesota with three players. One of Alabama's players, his name escapes me right now, Sexton, the freshman Sexton, he ended the game with 40 points. 40 points and played 10 minutes and 50 seconds with three players. Alabama actually outscored Minnesota in the second half. In that 10-minute stretch, Alabama with three players, only three players left, actually outscored Minnesota 30-24 in the second half within those 10 minutes. They actually outscored Minnesota. Minnesota, what's going on over there? Three players. Sexton ended the game with 40 points. At one time, the game, it was like a 3-point, 2-point game at one point. But the only reason Alabama lost this game. Now, this tells you the talent Alabama has. Alabama has talent on their team. How far they go in the tournament, I don't know. I know they got coaching, and I know they got talent. Because if you tell me that Alabama only lost by 5 points, in a game where they played a 10-minute stretch, damn near 11-minute stretch, with only three players eligible to play, and they outscore a team 30-24. Their best player, Sexton, the freshman, drops 40 on them. If you would have told me at the beginning of the year, that Alabama would play a game where they only had 3 points, three players, and they almost beat the team, I would tell you, stop lying, and I'd cuss you up. But that's exactly what happened. Minnesota, y'all hot garbage. Y'all hot garbage, Minnesota. One time for Avery Jones song. One time for Sexton. And one time for Alabama. And that bench got down. Like, the bench didn't do nothing wrong. The bench wasn't very egregious. But because they left the bench, because the rule is the bench cannot come on the floor when the brawl is happening. And because they all came on the court. Well, I mean, if I'm Avery Johnson, I ain't mad, but we got to be more disciplined. I ain't mad because you come to the aid of your homie. But that's a win in the victory. That's a loss, but that ain't no loss. But it's a loss. On paper it's a loss. On record it's a loss, but greatly. So that's crazy. That's funny. That's crazy. So now you know what time it is. Time for my weekly rant. You already can hear that I'm revved up. I'm already revved up. So my weekly rant, my energy this week is going to punk-ass Will Kane, who is a reporter and an analyst and a personality for ESPN. Because Will Kane has a problem with Kaepernick being the GQ person of the year. My first question is to Will Cain. Who the fuck cares about what you think? It's a reason why GQ didn't come to ask you, Will Cain, who you feel should be the GQ or the citizen of the year. There's a reason why GQ didn't ask you. Because they don't give a fuck about what you think, Will Cain. So Will Cain started rattling off, well, he disrespected the flag and the national anthem, and he wore pig socks, and he disrespected the police. He done all these things, and he doesn't deserve to be citizen of the year. What J.J. Watt did, J.J. Watt, basically they're trying to compare what J.J. Watt did to what Colin Kaepernick did. So let's break it down. Colin Kaepernick put his career on the line standing up for a situation that is actually happening on a regular basis, the people against the law, an unpopular topic, which actually cost him his job. He took the money and the resources that he had and put his money where his mouth is, and we're talking about an issue that don't affect everybody that he cares about. Versus J.J. Watt, when the hurricane happened in Houston, the flooding happened, they raised $30 million, and a situation that everybody cares about, J.J. Watt was able to capitalize. Now, what J.J. Watt did was good, but people do what J.J. Watt do every year. People do what J.J. Watt do all the time. They may not raise as much money, but let's just be real. If J.J. Watt was a regular white boy, he wouldn't have raised that much money. Being an NFL player helped J.J. Watt raise all that money. So Will Cain and other white boys feel like what J.J. Watt did was way more noble than what Colin Kaepernick did. And I call bullshit on all that. Because J.J. Watt saw a situation that he know everybody, that people would acknowledge affects everybody. White people are refusing to acknowledge that the police violence happened to black people. White people don't want to talk about it. And then, you disrespected our flag. Fuck your flag, fuck your anthem. Your flag and your anthem, my ancestors were enslaved when you got your so-called liberation or freedom from the British colonies. My people were enslaved by your people. And so how the fuck can that song and that flag mean the same for me and my people when my people were enslaved and being brutalized and dehumanized by your people? But you're going to tell me that we are wrong for taking the stand, or Kaepernick is wrong for using the anthem as a vehicle to take his stand. If he don't like cops, so what? If he thinks some cops are pigs, so what? Some cops are pigs. They are. Let's tell the truth. Some cops are pigs. You have to take a stand. Taking a stance against injustice is not popular. It's not going to make you popular. Anybody who become popular off of taking a stance for injustice, you need to look at them sideways, because they may not fully be taking a stand. They may be some old COINTELPRO. What Cap did was way more honorable than what J.J. Watt did. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a black man, but Cap is standing up, taking a stand for people, for the voiceless. He's being the voice for the voiceless. J.J. Watt, I don't have nothing bad to say about you. This ain't got nothing to do with you. This Will Cain, though. You a cracker-ass cracker, Will Cain, and the positions that you, because what pissed me off about Will Cain is this cracker, the way he comes about it as if what he says is the gospel, and if you say anything different from that, then you're wrong. And I'm a lawyer. Because I practice law, I'm right. Will Cain, you ain't shit. You ain't shit, Will Cain. And I'm glad you're not practicing law. I hope you're not practicing law full time, because we know a whole lot of black people be in jail fucking around with you, because you got that white Texas cracker mindset, and you only see things. You only willing to see things through a white lens, because let's say you only have to. But in this world of sports, with all these things going on, you try to give a fair point, but you can't because you're so fixated on your white point of view. You may not see it, but everybody else see it. Your white point of view keeps you so fixated on things that you can only see things through that lens, and you dismiss what we say. How the hell are you going to dismiss me telling you about my experience? How are you going to dismiss that? I'm telling you about my, if I was gay, you wouldn't dismiss it. If I was a woman, if I was a gay person and I said that I'm being discriminated against, nobody would dismiss it. If I was a woman and I said I'm being sexually assaulted, sexually things, and, well, if I'm a white woman, if I'm a black woman, it'll probably get dismissed. If I'm a white woman, that's not going to get dismissed. But I'm a, but as a black man in America telling people, and a black woman in America, because we're together, black men and black women in America, telling people that the law enforcement and white people and white policies and all these things are about the killing and the and the and the terrorizing of black people. Oh, no, that doesn't happen. That's not real. That doesn't happen. What about Chicago? What about Chicago? Do your research. I tell you, all you do your Chicago is barely in the top 25 in the United States of cities with the highest murder rates. Chicago is barely in the top 25 of cities in the United States. I think it's 24. Last thing I checked, it's 24. And it may be lower. It's so many cities with higher murder rates than Chicago. But Chicago, remember, Chicago is code word for black men. Chicago is a code word for black community. When they're talking about Chicago, they're talking about the black community. White people talk that way. Stephen A. Smith learned to talk that way with the white folk because he a bitch-ass motherfucker. But Will Cain, you was a hoe-ass cracker. You were a pussy cracker. I do not like you. I'm like, you shouldn't even, you, I want to fight you, Will Cain. I'm just saying, I want to fight. I'm calling you out, Will Cain. I'm offering you these hands. Yeah, I said it. I'm offering you these hands, Will Cain, because I'm tired of you. I'm just so tired of these white people on these stations who they feel like my opinion, my voice, this from this white man's point of view is what it is, and that's all it is, and it's nothing else. Just my white point of view. No, it's not. It's not. You ain't the only motherfuckers living in this damn country. And your ancestors have been oppressing my ancestors since first contact. Fuck you, Will Cain. Fuck you. So, going further into this hot mess of cracker-ass cracker and crackatocity, whatever. I'm just making up cracker words. So, white people stupid. Cracker-ass crackers stupid. Racist white people are stupid. Trump supporters are stupid. White supremacists are stupid. I'm convinced that white supremacists cannot read. Cracker-ass crackers cannot read. I'm convinced. Check out this headline. Trump supporters confuse LeVar Ball, the basketball dad, with LeVar Burton, the Reading Rainbow man, and tweet hate, and they attack LeVar Ball. Is basketball. LeVar Burton is Reading Rainbow Star Trek. Kunta Kinte. Reading Rainbow Star Trek Kunta Kinte. That's LeVar Burton. LeVar Ball, basketball. LeVar Burton, Reading Rainbow Star Trek Kunta Kinte. So, LeVar Burton is being attacked by Trump supporters on Twitter because they can't read and they think that LeVar Burton is LeVar Ball. So, Donald Trump and LeVar Ball, like I said told you last week, they're feuding because of the situation that happened when supposedly Trump helped to get LaMelo Ball out of trouble in China, and Trump got mad that LeVar Ball didn't thank him or whatever. I'm gonna say it like this. I'm gonna say the same thing I said last week. LeVar Ball, fall back. Keep your mouth closed on this one. It's hard to defend wrong. You come out here trying to, hey, these crackers going to talk. You want to know how these crackers going to talk? Because we need to develop better media outlets. But on this one, fall back. Fall back on this one. Trump going to talk what he talk. I'm not telling you not to talk. I'm not telling you to fire back. But it's hard for you to defend your son for doing wrong. But other than trying to defend the position of your son, and other than trying to let them bury your son, well, they're really not trying to bury your son. They're really, really not. But other than that, keep talking. But in this situation where you can't defend wrong, in that particular situation, you can't defend wrong. But other than that, let their ass happen. Let their ass happen, right? So, Trump supporters, so this is the tweet from Trump, right? So I'll reiterate this. LeVar, you could have spent the next 5 to 10 years during Thanksgiving with your son in China, but no NBA contract to support you. But remember, LeVar, shoplifting is not a little thing. It's a really big deal, especially in China, ungrateful fool. Now, I agree with that part. Stealing is a big deal. Don't take my shit. I don't take my shit, right? Trump tweeted that Ball was an ungrateful fool for not being more appreciative of the presidential intervention in D'Angelo Ball's case. Some of the president's followers in turn attacked LeVar Burton, not Ball. They attacked LeVar Burton on Twitter trying to come to help aid Trump. So somebody named @little_popsicle. So if y'all want to get their ass, I'll give you their handles. @little_popsicle. He said, washed up actor check. Son caught stealing the China check. Trump steal president check. But none of that is true, huh? LOL. I don't even know what that means. So, Mark Conte, this person's Twitter handle is @prosman. @prosman said he did the at to LeVar Burton. You're a has-been actor with a thief for a son, and Trump is the president of the United States. Get the picture. LeVar Burton is kind of like eating this up and having fun with it, but and it's more and more like Trump supporters, these ignorant cracker fucks, these ignorant inbred meth using, moonshine drinking, lice picking, no asshole washing, sister fucking, swamp smelling, doo-doo eating, cracker ass crackers, got the nerve. They can't read. They can't. I don't know if this is a rant. I don't know. But you dumbass crackers, y'all funny as hell. You Ball is spelled BALL. You know, like ball, like nuts, like balls, like the two things that hang under your ding-a-ling. Ball, like BA, like football, like basketball, like baseball, ball. Burton is BURTON, so LeVar. And so, because their names are similar. LE is LeVar, it's LeVar Ball, is LAVAR, LeVar and LeVar, LEVAR. So LeVar Ball and LeVar Burton. But these crackers can't spell, and we're the monkeys. They quit to call us monkeys, quit to call us coons, quit to call us ignorant, stupid. And quit to call us that while exhibiting these actions. Racism ain't dead. They just been concealing it. And then Obama came out and these crackers just started spilling it. I gave y'all a little rhyme there. Gave y'all a little rhyme. But no, seriously though, racism ain't going nowhere. Like, it kills me the people who think that because interracial relationships. My girlfriend is white. My mother's white. My grandmother's white. People who kill me who think because interracial relationships happen that racism doesn't exist. Like Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson wasn't fucking. Right. Like white people been fucking, white men been fucking black women. And black men been fucking black women since first contact. It's been happening. Sexual relationships or even romantic relationships will never kill the system of racism and white supremacy. Racism is a learned act, and clearly, clearly, each generation is learning its place. White cracker-ass racist crackers are teaching their new generations to be racist as shit. Racism ain't going nowhere, and these crackers are stupid as fuck, because they're hitting sin. They're literally going after, LeVar Ball has never acted. Where? Pull up his acting resume for me, please. Pull up his acting resume. But that just shows you how emotionally unintelligent these crackers are. These crackers are emotionally unintelligent, generally unintelligent, literally unintelligent, figuratively unintelligent. like for real. And they have the nerve to try to look down on us and call us stupid when these motherfuckers can't spell, read, write, or none of that shit. Y'all white folk need to go to hell with that dumbass bullshit that y'all got going on. I can't believe it's so funny. It's so funny. Y'all white folk crazy as hell. It's so funny that you attack LeVar Burton thinking you're getting back at LeVar Ball because of what he did or what he said or didn't say to Trump. I'm not saying he owed Trump an apology. I'm not saying he don't owe Trump an apology. I will say, LeVar, be quiet. Keep your mouth closed on this one. Just move on. Talk about other stuff. But let they ask. Do not shut your mouth completely. But you can't defend wrong. And you have to stop saying that it's not a big deal. It is a big deal when your son is stuck in Chinese jail and you yourself can't get your son out of Chinese jail. And you can say, well, he's not in the jail. He's in the hotel. Man, look. At the end of the day, your son was in a position his ass shouldn't have been in because he did something he shouldn't have done in another country. If your son was in my house and he stole, I would whoop your son's ass. So it is a big deal. Straight up, LeVar Ball, I fucks with you, but if your son was in my house and he stole something, I would fuck your son up. So stealing is a big deal. So don't try to... I understand in the grand scheme of things that he's not a murderer, he's not a criminal, he's not that. We're not going to try to ruin his life and stuff. I get that, and I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, on this one, it's kind of be cool. It's kind of be cool. Y'all keep getting that money. Y'all keep doing y'all thing. Shout out to the Big Baller Brand. Shout out to LeVar Burton. And, you know, that's my show. This is The Fix. We keep it real. We keep it gully. And, you know, man, we just do what we do, man. Florida style, South style, how we get down. Two fingers up like a player, man. I catch y'all next week, man. It's The Fix. I'm Joseph Ward. Back that up. I will holler at you people.
I am the greatest.
I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. That need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. Ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm